listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents In the Valley of the Shadow, a sermon by the Reverend Rick Skidmore, presented on Sunday, April 6th, 2014.
So part of what we've been trying to do this Lenten season is to rethink, reconsider, re-image, reimagine some long-held beliefs which have become attached to Christianity through the centuries, beliefs that I think can be a distortion or a distraction from faith. Beliefs and practices that can be destructive even and move us in the end away from God rather than closer to God and each other. It's been noted that young people are leaving the church at an alarming rate and for a variety of reasons. And for one, I think the public face of Christianity, the one that gets portrayed and popularized and projected by most media outlets where the loudest voices seem to garner the most attention. This brand of Christianity, I think, is enough to creep anybody out and send people off to look elsewhere. I mean, young people are unsure if or where there's any kind of safe place where they can turn to for spiritual nourishment and moral grounding, where all kinds of people can come together to be inspired and equipped. Millennials, the generation of young people between the ages of 18 and 33, are, I think, wired differently than the rest of us. And I don't mean their mastery of portable electronic devices that provide this continuous stream of global information and news and entertainment and the random opinions of thousands of their closest friends. Paul Taylor, in his book, The Next America, says of these millennials that they seek the good, but not necessarily God. By which he means that a steady number of young people continue to express an interest in spirituality and transcendence, but they've rejected organized religion. They found it impossible to measure their lives and the lives of others by assumptions that can no longer hold up to real-life scrutiny. What people want, young and old alike, I think, is a truth that is visible and transparent and also action-oriented. People are tired of religion getting in the way rather than paving the way. And some still express hope that someday Christianity might regain, you know, its true bearings in the spirit. But also worth noting among these millennials is that many of them remain attracted to, have not yet given up on, the idea of Jesus. So I say, let's give them Jesus. Last Sunday we were talking about the Lord's Prayer as a signature prayer of our faith, only I doubt that Jesus meant for this prayer to be used as in the kind of unthinking, parrot-like, perfunctory way that we usually use it on Sunday mornings. When Jesus taught his friends and his followers this prayer, he was trying to give them, I think, he was trying to give them a concept of life, a spiritual worldview out of which they would pray their own unique prayers. He was telling them, in other words, what kind of spiritual and mental outlook they needed if they were going to connect with God on the level that he connected with God on. What sort of content and concern was on his mind and in his heart that he spent so much time, and you read through the Gospels, he's always spending time in prayer, trying to converse and interact with this mystery called God. But I doubt that Jesus intended for us, for you and I, to get hung up on the actual words or wording. Last Sunday we contemplated the first part of the prayer, and today I want us to consider the rest. Picking up then with, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Now, there were in the early days of the church, there were a variety of versions of this prayer in circulation. And one translates these verses, quote, "And do not bring us to the test, but save us from the evil one." And I have issues with these kinds of word choices, and I hope you do too. Because I think that those words can keep us in this cloud of unknowing. God doesn't test us. I mean, life tests us. But I don't think God tests us. God's in our corner in times of trial and rejoicing. And I think you always have to be really careful when you personify evil. I mean, that whole Lucifer fallen angel scenario was really a story that was lifted from the Babylonian teachings, writings, when Israel was in exile. It never was a significant part of the Hebrew worldview or concept. And it shouldn't be with us either. I think to imagine, you know, a dark lord duking it out with God over control of the universe is best left to the sci-fi channel. Because it is really a way to dodge our responsibility for our own life choices and mistakes. You know, the devil made me do it. So whatever words you use, when you get to this point in the prayer, you've come face to face, I think, with the hardest part of Jesus' view of life, which is the notion that evil is real and that we are all of us capable of it. And also that it's more than just the evil is more than just the sum total of all its human parts. That order of chaos and havoc and discord and dislocation and negativity that is sort of careening through the universe in our daily lives. So here's the problem. God is all powerful. God is all loving. And horrible things happen. See, you can reconcile any two of those statements. You can reconcile any two of those propositions with each other, but you cannot reconcile all three. I think the reality of evil really remains one of the great challenges of faith. And there have been plenty of philosophical, theological attempts to solve it, but when it comes down to the reality of evil itself, I don't think any of them are worth very much. When faced with unspeakable atrocities, no one is apt to take much comfort in the explanation, actually better than most, that since God grants you and I radical freedom for us to love or not to love, that means people could choose not to love and choose instead to destroy if they have a notion to, if they have a mind to. Many Eastern religions try to solve the problem of evil by saying that it doesn't exist except as an illusion of the human mind. And Buddhism subscribes to the notion of reincarnation and the karmic law of cause and effect, whereby we're all of us merely reaping in this moment the consequences of deeds that we committed in another life. When it came to evil, Jesus offered no theological or theoretical solution at all. He simply stood up to it. He faced it, you know, in all of its fury, in the belief that there is no evil so obscene, but that God can't turn it to good, but that God can't turn it to light. Go figure. And when Jesus prayed, he apparently prayed a lot about this, prayed a lot about not getting tangled up, asked God to see him through the chaos and the temptations of life, and to be with him in that valley of the shadow to lead him and to shield him and to save him from evil. So we're to forgive people, right? Our fight isn't with people. I mean, people get tangled up in the chaos all the time, but people themselves are not evil. Our struggle isn't against other people. All people are the children of God. I think it's more than just a pretty thought. I don't think you can love people as Jesus did if you don't understand life the way that he did. Jesus felt compassion for outcasts and for outsiders, for maniacs and thieves, whereas you and I feel judgment and hatred. He saw them as caught up, overrun at times, by this negative spirituality of greed and wrath and anger and jealousy. And his effort was to free them from all those false gods and promises that tend to suck us all in. Break hold of the havoc, and a person can find release and recognize their true destiny as a child of God. And part of the difference has to be that Jesus knew where the real struggle was. While you and I keep trying to define and explain things in terms of good and bad people. The true threat, the scary fact is that we all of us can be drawn in and fall under the control and the deceits of the world's false promises and prizes. And Jesus was telling his friends and his followers that when he prayed about that. Often. He had to go into God's presence and remind himself who holds the power to rebuild and to revitalize all that injustice and atrocity is shattered. So if the Lord's Prayer is any indication, Jesus turned to God often with this kind of solitary, bare, stark, intimate prayer. And it was a kind of stabilizing compass for him, for his own life and living. Like Ezekiel before him, in the valley of his own shadow, Jesus wouldn't give in, you know, to pie-in-the-sky promises or to pessimistic despair. But he would hold on to but one hope. God will see us through. God knows. And God will see us through. So in our own journey toward life and freedom and healing and hope, do we have that same confidence in God to help us rise above our own heartache and our own trending social despair? Jesus prayed a lot, and we should too. Pray about these things. And from the perspective that he gave us. Pray in adoration and in deep hunger to know this great being to whom we belong. Pray about forgiveness, our own, until we're willing and ready to grant it to others. Pray about protection and awareness and deliverance and the strength to see things through by God's help. Pray. Before every new day, in front of the bathroom mirror, in the shower, pray while you're stretching and walking and playing and dancing. Thank God for the bumps in the road and for bridges half built and for this world that flies by at such a breakneck speed, for the great wind that's in our nostrils. For the twilight that closes around us at the end of each day. Bow your head before the universe and thank God. Thank God for that child that you knew so many years ago and maybe haven't spent much time with lately. I'll close with these words from Thomas Merton, that streetwise Trappist monk. This comes from a letter that was written to his friend Daniel Berrigan toward the end of the tumultuous 1960s. Quote, If communication with God is not real or possible, if God cannot guide and inspire, direct us, then all the rest of our knowledge about faith and scripture and tradition and ethics is empty. And the church is a sideshow. Without God's personal presence and influence, there is no way we can put things together into a way of life that is as different and unique as the life that Jesus calls us into. Peace of God.
Listen.